This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFK. If you're not already a member, consider joining with us and keep free speech alive.
Just up and strong.
Or make 'em.
Just from a slip of the tongue.
Don't talk about the weather.
Shh. It's a military secret.
Just keep your wits together.
That's the safest way to keep it.
These are critical times. Be careful of espionage.
In such critical times, you've got to watch out for sabotage.
If you must talk to someone,
don't give any information.
It's smart to be a dumb one. Simply change the conversation.
Let's just talk about love. 'Cause that's what I'm thinking of, and
it's no military secret that I love you.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Beneath the Surface. I'm Christine Blasdale, sitting in for Roseanne Barr and Johnny Argent, who are away on vacation, and I promise they will be back soon. Oh, that was Shh, It's a Military Secret by Glenn Miller. And speaking of secrets, just over 2 weeks ago, FBI translator turned whistleblower Sybelle Edmonds was finally allowed to speak about much of what the Bush administration spent years trying to keep her from discussing publicly on the record. Twice gagged by the Bush Department of Justice's invocation of the so-called, quote, state secrets privilege, unquote, Edmonds has been attempting to tell her story about the crime she became aware of while working for the FBI for years. Thanks to a subpoena issued by the campaign of Ohio's 2nd District Democratic U.S. Congressional candidate David Krikorian, her remarkable allegations of blackmail, bribery, espionage, infiltration, and criminal conspiracy by current and former members of the U.S. Congress, high-ranking State and Defense Department officials, and agents of the government of Turkey are seen and heard here in full for the first time in her under oath deposition. Both the complete videotape and transcript of the deposition are available at bradblog.com. And I'm happy to have sitting with me today, folks, Brad Friedman of bradblog.com. Many of you know Brad from his incredible reporting on election fraud, but I've got to say, Brad, that you are the one man who has really helped to get Sybelle Edmonds her voice heard while corporate media completely ignores her. And he's alerted fans of his Brad blog site and sat in for a national radio talk show host, Mike Malloy, and was instrumental in getting Sybelle's voice heard. So first off, Brad, thank you for this incredible work that you're doing.
Well, you know, I should say back, thank you for being interested enough and willing to talk about this and to have me in to talk about this, because I have been absolutely astounded. I probably shouldn't be by now, but I have been absolutely astounded at the lack of coverage of this absolutely remarkable testimony that Sybelle gave 2 weeks ago now. It's just now been made public in full. I covered it on the day that it occurred. And we were all sort of sitting on pins and needles wondering, would the Obama administration pick up where the Bush administration was as far as bringing in, as far as invoking the state secrets privilege, which the Bush administration did on this case, on her, twice, to the fact where, to the point where she was not able to talk about when and where she was born, where she went to school. I mean, it was insane the lengths that they went to keep this woman, an FBI translator, to keep her shut up. Now, admittedly, some of these allegations that have been coming out over the years in different means, in bits and pieces, and now in one place, sort of at one time in this deposition that came out of an Ohio case, of all things, that having to do with an election that she's not really involved with. I admit that these are extraordinary allegations. That said, if they were not true, why the hell did the Bush administration work so hard to shut this woman up so much, invoking the state secrets privilege twice, to the point that the ACLU has called her the most gagged woman in the history of the U.S.? Now the information is out, and the media, at least in the U.S., couldn't apparently couldn't give a damn. It's unbelievable.
I was going to say, I haven't seen or heard a thing about it.
No, and whenever a story having to do with her comes out, you had mentioned I was guest hosting Mike Malloy's show, and she had I was interviewing her a couple weeks ago on that show, and she had dropped this just a small bit. I even didn't really notice it at first, where she said that the U.S. had been working with Al-Qaeda and Osama bin Laden, when they didn't call them Al-Qaeda, by the way, until September 11th, according to Sibel, but they had been working with them all the way up until September 11th. Pretty notable.
That's pretty hot stuff.
Piece of information that's, coming from an FBI translator, I would think. It was not picked up at all. Another sort of expert in Sibel Edmonds, a fellow by the name of Luke Ryland down in New Zealand, picked it up, translated the, transcribed the conversation, pointed this out, and it made news in, you know, Turkey, Pakistan, India, everywhere but here.
Wow.
Just, you know, that's our media. Now, you would think, given the disclosures, and I know we'll get into that in a second, but given the disclosures that she dropped on current and former, you know, U.S. congressmen, we're talking about Dennis Hastert, Dan Burton, Roy Blunt of Missouri, and even some of the sexual blackmail that is at the center of this thing. Well, hell, the sexual stuff alone, you would think would be enough.
You would think Fox or CNN or somebody would pick up on it.
And the sexual stuff, the key one that I'm sure we'll talk about in a moment, actually has to do with the Democrat. So you've got a Democrat in a incredibly salacious allegation here. Isn't that enough to get Fox News and Drudge Report going? Apparently not.
Apparently not. And you know the old story that if a story happens and Fox or CNN or any of the other, you know, news industries that you can trust,
right?
When they don't report it, it just didn't happen.
Did it actually happen? Right. Exactly. And that's what we're dealing with here. Because these allegations are just that alarming and that stunning. And because they have to do with U.S. House members and high-ranking officials in the State Department and the Defense Department, But largely, I think, because they have to do with Congress, the hearings in Congress ain't going to happen. And this is something that Henry Waxman had told Sibel Edmonds when the Democrats were still in the minority. He had been telling her for years, hey, as soon as we get into the majority, believe me, this is going to be one of my first hearings. And she has been interviewed with Waxman in Waxman's office in the SCIF, they call it, which is up in the Capitol, we'll call it the cone of silence at the Capitol, a highly secret vault. And she's been interviewed on all of this material with Waxman's office, so they know what's going on here. They promised her there would be hearings, and of course, now that since they became the majority, they stopped even calling her or the National Whistleblower Center back, anybody. Yeah. So, and because we're dealing with Congress people who are both Republican and Democratic, unfortunately, who seem to be compromised, who seem to have been blackmailed by these.
And this is just one individual, what she knows, what she has learned. This, imagine the amount of people within a whole host of different departments. Yeah. I feel that it's almost like someone is tugging on a sweater, a little loose piece of yarn.
Yeah.
And I think that both Democrats and Republicans are afraid that if you keep pulling, it's going to just wreck the whole sweater.
Well, you know, we've got some top folks. I mean, if they're talking about having hearings on this, are these Congress people who are a part of these allegations, will they be sitting on those committees? You know, and how many of them? We know that Sibel has named about, I think, about five or six of them. But how many more is she not aware of? Now, the information that she became aware of was because, as a translator, a language specialist in the FBI, she was listening to wiretaps going as far back as, I think, 1990. But she was hired right after 9/11. She's proficient. She's actually born in Iran, but she's her mom and dad are Turkish. She speaks Farsi, Azerbaijani, one or two other languages. So she was listening to these wiretaps of targets in the counterintelligence division in the FBI, people who were suspected of doing things like bribing congressmen, stealing nuclear secrets from our nuclear bases around the country, drug running from the Turkish-Afghan heroin trade. So she was going back and listening to those tapes. You remember after 9/11, they complained, oh, we don't have enough translators who can speak all of these various languages. So they hired a bunch of translators after them. She was hired on September 15th, 2001, to begin listening to this backlog of material. And the allegations that she has been trying to get across come from what she heard on those tapes. In other words, these congressmen, these officials themselves, who are being tapped by the FBI, or actually probably being caught in a tap. In other words, the FBI are wiretapping, you know, the actual bad guys, and the bad guys happen to pick up the phone and say, "Hey, Denny Hastert, we'll deliver you a $200,000 if you keep a vote from coming to the floor on this Armenian genocide resolution." Mm-hmm. And this is, and this, by the way, this Armenian genocide, it goes back a 100 years to World War One. It seems to me, you and me, probably as this arcane, you know, 100-year-old thing, but to the Turks and the Armenians,
this is still incredibly serious.
The Armenians liken it to Holocaust denialists, those who, you know, won't acknowledge this genocide of 1.5 million people.
That's not something you just kind of cover up.
Right.
Just say, let's go on. Let's look to the future.
Well, apparently the Turkish lobby is trying very much to move on and look to the future and not discuss this, not have it come up on the floor of the House of Congress. That is how Sibel's deposition came about in the first place. It was this case in Ohio before the Ohio Election Commission. Jean Schmidt, Mean Jean Schmidt, as they call her, the 2nd District from Ohio, Congresswoman, Republican, brought a case before the Ohio Election Commission against David Krikorian, who ran against her in 2008, last year, as an independent, and asked, and he had claimed that she was accepting blood money from Turkish forces. And in fact, he says that she took more money from Turkish PACs than anybody else in Congress, and yet in her constituency, there are almost no Turks at all. Now, Krikorian happens to be Armenian. And so he held this against her. She is apparently the co-chair of the Turkish caucus in Congress for some reason. And so she has brought a case against him for, claiming that she was accepting blood money. And Krikorian sort of called her bluff on this and has said, all right, let's bring in Sibel Edmonds and see how this works and how this blackmail of Congress people actually occurs. And that's what they went into in this extraordinary deposition for the first time, at least publicly, on the record and under oath in the case of Sibel Edmonds.
I've captured a little bit of sound from this deposition that Sibel Edmonds did. This was 2 weeks ago, and it's posted, by the way, folks, the entire thing is at bradblog.com. There's a transcript as well, so you can follow along. And we're going to be playing a clip from that, and then we'll come back and talk a little bit more, because this is crazy. This is stuff that should be front page news. Because what we're talking about too, folks, it's like a mystery novel kind of thing. There's issues of bribery, of like sexual allegations.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Nuclear secrets, market. Valerie Plame comes into this story. Brewster Jennings comes into this story in a way that, as Sibel described it on the day of the deposition, as I was live blogging it that day, they were coming out, taking breaks and sort of speaking to the media. I put air quotes around that because the media was me and a couple of other outlets. Armenian Weekly was there. But, you know, she came out and she said, I got to tell for the first time the real story about Brewster Jennings. And I think it's pretty much a direct quote, not the crap you hear in the mainstream media. Because she has alleged the story you have heard so far about Brewster Jennings, Valerie Plame, is, quote, crap. That, in fact, Brewster Jennings, their cover was blown not by Bob Novak and Karl Rove and Scooter Libby, but actually 3 years earlier, in August of 2001, Brewster Jennings was kaput because a high-ranking State Department official by the name of Mark Grossman actually outed Brewster Jennings to one of his diplomatic contacts that was being targeted. So he tipped them off. He tipped off the bad guys to Brewster Jennings and killed it.
That is a federal crime, right?
That's a
serious...
That's about as big a federal crime as you get.
Yeah. Okay. Let's listen now to the Sibel Edmonds in her deposition, which took place 2 weeks ago.
Okay. Simon, have you ever reviewed your Wikipedia entry?
Once in a while I do. I don't know when was the last time, but maybe a year ago.
Okay. And as you know, I mean, have you ever contributed to it, or do you know people who do contribute to it?
No, I know many people, they take any mainstream media articles or any reports, they put it in there, but no, okay. I haven't contributed.
Have you, when you've looked at it, have you thought that it's generally accurate about the statements that it makes?
Yes, generally yes.
One of the things that it indicates in your biographical information is that you've made certain allegations. Some of them we've talked about a little bit, and I wanted to ask you about some of the others. One of the entries indicates nuclear secrets black market. It says, Edmonds alleges that in the course of her work for the government, she found evidence that the FBI, State Department, and Pentagon had been infiltrated by a Turkish and Israeli-run intelligence network that paid high-ranking officials to steal nuclear weapons secrets. And they have some footnotes for that, some sites. Is that correct that you've made those allegations?
That information is correct, and if ever we may think it, I would say those are government organizations and others. There's another place missing there. They list the State Department, etc., but there's one other place that's missing.
And what is that place?
That would be RAND Corporation.
And can you tell me about the, give me some more information about the Turkish and Israeli-run intelligence network that is referred to there?
Again, this information has been public. Without getting into any methods of intelligence gathering. Yes, through certain U.S. Officials, executively appointed officials, foreign entities, not necessarily or not only government related, so if you say Israel and Turkey, not only government related, but other entities, because it has multi-layers, their operations, and some of these layers sometimes they conduct their operations independently and with the sole purpose of obtaining a profit. And therefore, the information they obtain, let's say the nuclear or weapons technology-related information, doesn't necessarily only go to Turkey or Israel, but they sell it to the highest bidder. That's how they operate. They contact their people, whether it is in ISI, in Washington, D.C., part of the military attaché for Pakistani intelligence, or the certain Saudi business people in Detroit may be contacted, and they say, okay, and talk about these Turkish entities, we have obtained this particular DVD containing this, and this person is willing to pay $500,000, will you offer more? Because if you don't, you will give it to this person. So what I'm trying to say is they do it both for governments, foreign governments, but some of those operatives, they offer it in open market, and they have... they have individuals on their payroll on almost every major nuclear facility in the United States, RAND Corporation, and in Midwest, various Air Force labs that develop certain weapons technology, which I'm not very familiar with the technology itself.
When you refer to the... when the article refers to the paid high-ranking American officials, can you identify who they are?
That person has been identified by others. And he has been identified as the as Mr. Mark Grossman, who used to work for the State Department.
And Mr. Grossman, I think, is also in your gallery, correct?
Yes.
And I read somewhere that Mr. Grossman had some relationships with a Turkish organization, Turkish diplomats here in the United States.
Yes, he had very, very close relationship with not only Turkish diplomatic communities and entities, but business, and also some of these criminal layer operatives that I told you about. And currently that he's not working, he actually is working for a Turkish company called Ihlas Holding.
Okay. Now, was Mr. Grossman the ambassador to Turkey at some point?
Yes.
Okay. And then, what was his position at the State Department, if you recall?
He had several different positions. I believe in 1999 or 2000 was European Affairs that dealt a lot with NATO. And afterwards, during an early Bush administration's stage, he was the second or the third highest person in the State Department.
Ooh, the second or the third highest person at the State Department,
and
Mr. Mark Grossman.
Mark Grossman, I believe his title was Deputy, Assistant Deputy Secretary of State. If I
that was Sibel Edmonds speaking at her deposition, which took place 2 weeks ago. The entire transcript and video you can watch at bradblog.com. I'm Christine Blasdale, sitting in for Roseanne Barr and Johnny Argent. You're listening to Beneath the Surface on KPFK 90.7 FM Los Angeles, 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara. And I'm joined live in studio with Brad Friedman. Brad.
Yeah.
Okay, so...
You can hear in her voice, by the way, as she's talking, she was trying to be very careful because she does have... even though she's no longer with the FBI, she was illegally terminated when she started complaining about the fact that the translation unit itself had been infiltrated with these folks, and that, for example, one of the Turkish translators, was actually married to a guy who was working for one of the companies that was being targeted.
Right.
One of the organizations, I should say, that was being targeted. And here she is, the wife, responsible for listening to these tapes and letting the English-speaking agents know if there's anything here they should be concerned
nothing
with or
here,
not.
Nothing here, folks.
Yes,
nothing
exactly.
Here.
So she was being very careful, Sibel was, to still honor that agreement. Even though she doesn't work there, she still has, you know, certain disclosure agreements.
Correct.
And was trying to sort of speak around what she, you know, has been confirmed by other sources, or that she learned from other sources. Not that she learned from other sources, things that she knew, but where she could get confirmation about them from a separate source.
Right.
Now she can say, well, I'm not talking about what I heard, but
right, and
somebody else.
And
yeah.
Also, part of the, with Sibel Edmonds, she's not just some crazy loony person. A lot of what she has said, too, I've heard you've said this, but a lot of what she has said has been confirmed.
Oh, yeah.
By others.
By other FBI agents. As a matter of fact, Chuck Grassley, the Republican senator, both he and Pat Leahy of Vermont, the Democratic senator, were on 60 Minutes talking about the Sibel Edmonds story. They did an episode on this story back in 2002, which, by the way, the Bush administration subsequently retroactively classified.
What?
Yeah. They classified an episode of 60 Minutes retroactively. I kid you not.
So you can't get that episode?
No,
you can't
you
find
can
it?
Because 60 Minutes said, well, the hell with this. They actually ran it two more times. But officially, it's classified. Now, anyway, so Grassley on there was asked about Sibel Edmonds' credibility, and he said, I don't have the exact quote in front of me, but pretty close here. I think he said, quote, yes, I believe she's credible, and the reason I believe she's credible is because what she has alleged has been confirmed by other sources at the FBI. As well, the FBI Inspector General said in his report on her case that was declassified, or at least portions of it in 2005, that yes, she is, her allegations are credible, serious, and these are direct quotes, and, quote, warranting further investigation. So, yeah, as far as her, you suggest, you know, being some crackpot, apparently not according to the, you know, the top House Judiciary senators, apparently not according to the FBI Inspector General himself, and apparently not according to the Bush administration, who went to extraordinary means to shut her up.
Right. In the deposition, there included criminal allegations against specifically named members of Congress.
Right.
According to your website, among those named by Edmonds as part of a broad criminal conspiracy, Representative Dennis Hastert, a Republican from Illinois, what'd he do?
Speaker of the House. He, at the time, apparently, and some of the material on Denny Hastert came out in, I think it was 2005, Vanity Fair did like a 5,000-word investigative report on this, a reporter named David Rose, which, of course, nobody followed up on. But they talked about specifically that Hastert was blocking, among other things, a vote on the Armenian Genocide Resolution that we talked about.
Mm-hmm.
Just as it was coming to the floor, apparently he had been in favor of it
before
in the past, but he's the speaker. He decides what's going to be voted on, what isn't. All of a sudden, he started receiving hundreds and hundreds of donations to the amount of $199, which means you don't have to disclose who they came from if they're less than $200.
So it was $199, but a whole bunch of them.
About $300,000 worth.
Ooh.
And what has come out is that it came in via Turkish interest, Turkish drug dealers related to the heroin trade, and all of a sudden, before this thing, it had passed in committee, but before it got to the floor, Denny Hastert decided we don't want to vote on this after all. Now, I should add that he has never disputed the allegations that came out in Vanity Fair, and he has neither has he disclosed who all of these $199 donations were, apparently. But in case you're wondering what came of Denny Hastert, who has since resigned from Congress recently, I think about a year ago, he now works for a lobbying firm on behalf of the Turkish government, making $35,000 a month
from Turkey. Ow! Staff members here work a year and are lucky if they get that.
You got the wrong job, baby.
I know,
apparently, though, other than that, Sibel's just making all this up, right?
Oh, wow. Okay, let's go to let's go to California. Tom Lantos, a Democrat.
A Democrat.
Can't be that bad of a
Well,
cat, right?
We have a number of Democrats who are named here, and Tom Lantos is actually deceased now. But he and Stephen Solar is another Democrat. And I don't know that we have the specifics on what they did and how they were hooked in here. And hooked is actually a very important word because this describes another Democrat who was involved. And by the way, I want to make sure that we mention some of the Republicans who are still serving in Congress.
Yes.
Who are also involved here. Dan Burton of Indiana. Mm-hmm. Roy Blunt of Missouri, who I think is fixing to leave and run for governor of Missouri. She names them in similar schemes and blackmail schemes to Denny Hastert. But the other Democrat that I wanted to mention, who is unnamed, is a woman, a congresswoman who is still serving, is a Democrat, and the reason she has, well, I'll explain how she's hooked in here, but Sibel talks about what the way these guys operated is they would find the weak points of these officials, these Congress members and so forth. And this particular woman, who's still serving and is a Democrat, is apparently bisexual. Mm-hmm. Yet she's married and she has children. And apparently these Turkish agents were able to bug her townhouse with video cameras.
Uh-oh.
And then have a Turkish agent, I don't know, it's a prostitute or an agent or whatever, have a lesbian encounter with this congresswoman. Now, and apparently the whole thing is videotaped.
It's called leverage.
Yeah. And the reason that Spell has not disclosed the name of this person, these other folks have been named, their photographs, you can see it on her, what she set up as, you called it, Sibel Edmonds National Secrets Gallery, where she didn't say anything about these people before, because that would have been a violation, but she just put up their photographs and let other people identify them. So there's something like five Congress members, and then there's one, a sixth one with a question mark on it. That is apparently this woman, and the reason she did not put her picture there is because she does not know if, in fact, this blackmail was ever used against this congresswoman. The other ones who she's named, she knows that they have been, you know, that they have done, they have taken something for their blackmail or their bribery. This woman, she's not even sure, I believe, if the woman to this day even knows that she was videotaped in this. So we don't know. So that's why she didn't want to ruin her life by exposing the name of this person.
Wow.
But
wow.
That's the kind of control they exert. These are the kind of people, these are what these bad guys are doing to hook these high officials.
And these high officials are, this is like, it's like a site, it's like having another job without having to even go and selling your country down. I mean, we're talking nuclear secrets, weapons technology from labs, okay, which conjures up a whole host of heinous things in my mind, selling it to the highest bidder.
And we're talking nuclear facilities around the country selling, and she has either said or it has come out. Sunday, UK Times of London actually covered this about a year ago, incredible aspect of this. that they're, again, hooking these military folks at these bases, selling the information to the nuclear black market via Turkey, which has is apparently how AQ Khan got the bomb in Pakistan because of this close alliance between Turkey and Pakistan. And then from there, AQ Khan, the father of the bomb in Pakistan, sold that technology to Iran, Libya, North Korea, and so on and so forth. So we're talking about selling our own nuclear secrets, high officials knowing that this is going out to these countries who are our enemies. And then, as you mentioned when we were talking earlier, then we've got our own military-industrial society, which gets paid again
to protect us
from
the
against Iran and
evil.
Libya and North Korea.
Right.
Exactly.
No, that's, it's like vultures because they're getting it from all ends. They get a little money here, they get a little money there. Oh, we need to protect the people from this danger.
Right. And now, if all of this, by the way, is untrue, someone would be doing us a great service to go in and disprove it instead of ignoring it and to look into these because these are startling allegations and let us know that this is not true, that she is making this stuff up. But nobody has done that. And in fact, quite the opposite. All of these official sources who did get information, you know, who were interviewed in secure facilities, these senators, these congresspeople, the inspector general of the FBI have all confirmed that she is credible and truthful, and the fact that we are sitting around with this stuff going on is bad enough. But add to that the fact that no one in the U.S. mainstream media seems to give a damn about it is absolutely, at least in my opinion, breathtaking.
Breathtaking is, that's a kind word
right.
that you use.
Yeah.
We have a little less than 5 minutes left, and I wanted to just, because we kind of glossed over it really fast. She was hired after 9/11, and she was basically translating these intercepts or these communications.
Wiretaps,
from back from 1990, right?
As far back as
1990.
Yeah.
Now, how did she, because I had heard on the program when someone had called and asked if she thought that 9/11 was an inside job, and she did a very good job about, you know, she's like, I only know what I know.
Right.
And from my memory, she had made it a point to say that bin Laden has been working for the intelligence agencies for a very long time, up to 9/11.
Now, right up until September.
Can you expand 11th. On that? I'm curious to. That would tell a lot, because if you have an employee working for you up until 9/11, and then on 9/11 something tragic happens, and you say this strange man who I've never seen before did this horrible crime. I would think that would need investigation.
One would think so. And as a matter of fact, she did interview with the 9/11 Commission for about 3 hours. Her entire testimony has been classified. So in any case, we spoke about it on that show. She actually gets into that aspect of it in some detail in the deposition, in the transcript itself, whether you read the transcript or watch the video. And I would encourage people to not only do that, you know, go over to Bradlog and look at this, but, you know, also dig it, Reddit it, pass it out to the media, take it upon yourself to get this word out because, to be the media, because somehow this information has got to get out. So what she had to say in brief, is that the U.S., has been working with Al-Qaeda and Osama bin Laden, and that they continued doing so right up until 9/11. And in fact, she says that they did not call them Al-Qaeda until September 11, 2001, but they were referred to as the Mujahideen. Now, we know that, in fact, going back to Afghanistan and so forth, that we were helping the Mujahideen to throw out the nasty Ruskies back there. And so the relationship had been going on for a long time, and I think everyone really knows that. I think what they don't know is how it continued even after the Russians left Afghanistan, how it continued right up until 2011, and how they were essentially working with them. And she talks about it in the deposition, these Mujahideen folks who were essentially building up their forces in places like Eastern Europe, to be a fighting force when needed, whether it's against the Russians or the Chinese, and at the same time, taking the money that we are giving them to help them do this, building madrasas all across the world, and, you know, training people to hate Americans, and which she says has directly resulted in the deaths of Americans. And yet, we're working with those people. She refers to it in the deposition as, I believe, a continuing Cold War mentality.
Right.
Where we're sort of
working with all sides. Right.
You create the enemy, you cover all your bases. You know, who knows? Maybe there's terrific national security reasons for all of this. It's somewhat difficult to see, however, and when you find out that these people are actually controlling us rather than us controlling them, you've got some troubling questions that come about.
Yes, you do.
Yeah.
Brad Friedman of bradblog.com. Folks, if you want to check out Sybelle Edmonds' testimony or her deposition, which took place just 2 weeks ago, corporate media is completely silent on it. You don't have to be. Go check it out at bradblog.com.
And one breaking news I can give you here that I haven't even run at Bradblog yet, but I spoke with David Krikorian before coming to the studio today. He's the guy who's, you know, in this Ohio case that has brought in Sybelle Edmonds. The fellow who is representing Gene Schmidt in this case, a guy by the name of Bruce Fein, who you may know, and a lot of progressives actually like Bruce Fein because he has spoken out against the Bush administration for years, even though he was a Republican in the Reagan administration and so forth. He's representing her as her attorney, Gene Schmidt, who brought this case, yet he is the top lawyer for, I believe it's the American Turkish Council, so the Turkish lobby itself. And the news that I got, so why he's, you know, she hires him to carry on this case, I don't know, but the news that I got from David Krikorian is that they went to the Ohio Election Commission to ask if they could depose Bruce Fein, Gene Schmidt's attorney, and today they got the permission to do so. So the attorney in the case will now be deposed, and perhaps we'll get at even more of how all of these folks are being paid off, are being, you know, involved in this Turkish lobby that is just extraordinarily, it seems to me, anti-American, ultimately.
Yes, to say the least. Thank you so much, Brad Friedman of bradblog.com. Thank you for coming in and all your hard work on this. And when you speak to Sybelle, say hello to her from KPFK.
Thank you, Christine. I will. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. We'll be right back after this short break. Going to talk about what's in your water. Stay tuned.